Hugh Masekela, welcome back. Reminding on our way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. There's a brand new program here on WEAA, Blacktop Exchange Sports Report. And the co-host with us to talk sports with us today in the studio, Jerry Bembry, veteran sports journalist who worked in Baltimore Sun and ESPN. He now teaches media here at Morgan State University. Of course, co-host of the new program, David Steele's in the studio, NFL writer for the Sporting News, co-author of The Silent Gesture, the autobiography of Tommy Smith, and Ali Danwa, senior editor of Bounce Magazine, also co-host of Blacktop Exchange. Good to have you all here.
Oh, thanks very much.
Mark, it's great to be here. And I love that Hugh Masekela. I got a chance to see him in concert in the 90s in Toronto, man. Amazing.
He can play.
Music.
Mm. So your time to chime in here at 410-319-8888. But let's start, David Steele, that story you told us during the break about the MLK story in baseball.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Obviously, this is a huge day in history. 40 years. This is the 40-year anniversary of Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's record. It was actually on April 8th of 1974. And opening day in 1974 was on April the 4th. Baseball, the commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, had come to Hank the end of spring training right before the season and said, you know, we want to make sure we treat you right. Is there anything we can do for you that's really special as the season begins, as you come right up on tying and setting this record? Just tell us anything and we'll accommodate you as best we can. And he said, here's what you could do for me. I'll only ask this one thing. Have a moment of silence before the season opener in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. This is the 6th anniversary of his assassination. And baseball and Bowie Kuhn said, that's okay. No, we'd rather not. Thanks. And that's how much they loved Hank Aaron at the time.
People forget how much they didn't like Martin Luther King.
And that was a bit, yeah.
That's true.
Right? Equal
that's
parts true. Of both. Yeah, that was a bit too much. Yeah, we'll do anything. Ah, not that.
So let's go right to this crazy story you guys are talking about that I really wasn't aware of with the New York Mets. This is insane. Who wants to jump in?
You want to tell
us? Yeah, I'll tell a story. There's an infielder, a second baseman for the New York Mets named Daniel Murphy. And as part of the baseball collective bargaining agreement, baseball players are allowed to get 3 days paternity leave. Now, most places will give you maybe 2 weeks, and you get 3 days. And so on opening day, his wife had a baby. And he took opening day off and traveled down to his home. I think it was in Florida.
In Florida.
And to see his wife and to see the new addition to the family. Well, you know, as New York radio does, as they usually do, Boomer Esiason got on the airwaves and really critiqued Murphy and said that his wife should have had a C-section before the season. And so he should have been committed. Now, granted,
Mercy.
Baseball season is 162 games long. Daniel Murphy played 162 games last year, so he is an Iron Man. But the fact that you criticize this man for taking a day off, I mean, you know, it's going to cost him a game. The Mets are a terrible team anyway. They're not going to go to the playoffs. It's not going to be a difference between one game. So, I mean, it just really shows how media members overstep their boundaries sometimes and not really in touch with reality sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's just really sad.
Where are our values?
No, zero. their values are in the game. The game is everything, and life just doesn't mean anything.
Good Lord, have mercy.
Yeah.
And what's ironic is that Boomer Esiason's son has cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. So if anyone should understand just the value of a child and good health
yes.
and being there, he should understand. And he's done this great foundation for his son, and he's brought awareness to that campaign. And to come down with something like this is just really
sometimes sportscasters just don't have a line they need to have between between their brain and their mouth.
You know, I'm going to say those are the professional athletes who go into that sportscasting
right.
role.
Okay.
They never learn the lessons to do it in the correct way.
Well, lacking in perspective.
Absolutely.
That's what it
all comes down to. Let's talk, folks. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Your take. Let's talk about the two Final Fours coming up. Let's go there.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, you started out.
Well, see if I start, I'm going to start out with my alma mater, University of Maryland.
Oh, gosh.
My women Terps are in Nashville right now. They're
yes.
in the Final Four. They're facing one of the two undefeated teams.
When's the game?
The game is Sunday night.
Sunday night, right.
It's in Nashville. They play Notre Dame. They won an incredible game, just one of the best basketball games you see at any level, any gender, anywhere, the other night, to beat Louisville in Louisville.
Wow,
to qualify. I mean, they had a big lead, and it shrunk down, and Louisville had a chance to tie the game on the last second, and it was pretty crazy. So they play Notre Dame on Sunday, and the winner of that game plays either Connecticut or Stanford, and Connecticut is also undefeated. So
here we go. And that's a solid Final Four. And I think, you know, going into this whole tournament, the fact that they beat Louisville in Louisville was huge, and Louisville had been to the Final Four a year ago. But now they get a Notre Dame team who just lost one of their top players to an ACL injury. And so that plays to Maryland's advantage, and Maryland's playing some of the best basketball all season. And Brenda Freese, as usual, has done a tremendous job with that team and leading them back to the Final Four.
Ali?
I'm looking at this Final Four on the men's side, and really excited about the two matchups that we're going to look at. You know, in the first matchup with Florida and Connecticut, we have the team that a lot of people think is the best team in college basketball, which is Florida, and they've got this great defense that they've utilized to get to this point and play some really magnificent ball this year. They've only lost two games this year, and ironically enough, one of them was to Connecticut, who they're playing in the Final Four, and the other one was to Wisconsin, who's playing Kentucky in the other Final Four. So, you know, UConn has just truly transformed themselves during the regular season, where they were a very good team, but I don't think anyone outside of Storrs, Connecticut, had them going to the Final Four in their bracket. If you've looked at their free throw percentage, you know, coaches always harp on the fact that a lot of games are won and lost at the free throw line. Connecticut, by looking at Shabazz Napier, he made 25 of his 27 free throws leading through the NCAA tournament, over close to 93%. At Madison Square Garden during the East Regional, they made 41 out of 44
right.
free throws. So, you know, there's always kind of a thin line of separation between winning and losing. But they've been doing the small things to really help them, you know, get pushed to this level. But when you look at it, it's very tenuous because people forget, you know, yeah, they're in the Final Four, but in their first game against St. Joseph's, they were down by 3 points with a minute to play. That game went into overtime. They got past Villanova in the third round, and then, you know, Iowa State they play, and they're probably missing, you know, one of their most important pieces in George Niang. So they advanced to the regional final. And for some reason in that game, Michigan State obviously was the stronger team, but they had some brain flatulence.
Right.
Because they shot about 33-pointers.
Ollie, I can't believe you just used that term on the air, buddy.
Yeah, it's a morning show, man.
It's a morning show, Ollie.
It's much too early for all that. I don't know. I'm going to go back to women's ball for a minute.
I just want to jump in on Ollie's point real quick about Connecticut. Kevin Ollie is in his second year there.
Right.
You know, for a while they didn't know if he was going to last and get hired as a full-term coach. The way it's laid out in college basketball, you have to be a head coach somewhere else before you become a head coach at a major program. 4 years ago, Kevin Ollie was playing in the NBA. 2 years ago, he was an assistant coach, never been a head coach. And so for him to get this team to this level is just an amazing, amazing accomplishment. I think he should be applauded. And he's got a nice deal, I think, with Connecticut right now. And
it's
so,
not
yeah.
easy to be a coach. I mean, being a great coach takes a huge amount of skill, especially I think, in college and high school ball. You know what it takes. There's a young man here, who Sam Brand, who played for Morgan, who has a summer camp here in math and basketball every year. Great. And I'm thinking about him when you said this. Watch when he's done at Poly to turn that team around to becoming a contender when he couldn't get the players he needed. And you have to really think, be a strategist, and love your players and love kids and guys to make that to make that work.
The commitment is absolutely unbelievable. At every level, but especially once you get below the pros, once you get to the colleges and the high schools, where you have so much responsibility on your hands. And, of course, that ties into a lot of the things we've talked about for the longest time about what's going on in college sports in terms of making the balance between academics, athletics, and just the fairness of who does what and who's responsible for what. But, you know, to have a young guy like Kevin Ollie, and think about this, the other three coaches in the Final Four have all won championships. Billy Donovan has won two at Florida. Calipari's won one at Kentucky. And Bo Ryan won at, if I'm not mistaken, either Division II or Division III level multiple times before he got the Wisconsin job. So they've all been through the battles and have been to the very pinnacle of this industry with varying numbers of kids because the landscape of college sports changes so much with the way they come out early and they transfer all the time, and you got a different cast of characters every single year. And to get them to – and they all have different agendas, obviously, because some want to go pro, some want to just succeed in college. You know, there's always just all sorts of personal things going on. And to get them to this level is an incredible accomplishment.
So one of the things I think about, just real quickly, I was looking at thinking about the women's basketball, the Final mm-hmm. Four, and I love women's b-ball. I mean, it's grown to such – an incredible game.
Yeah. The quality of it has increased in the last, maybe 20
yes,
years.
Absolutely.
From where it was there to now, it's just
I think this Final Four is going to be an amazing weekend to watch women play. And you know what struck me is looking at the rosters and looking at some of the top players. How many of the players are like Nigerian-American? Have you noticed that?
Yes. I noticed
in
that.
Women's mm-hmm. ball?
Stanford, yeah.
Stanford's
got two sisters,
Right, you know, and Maryland, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
As well.
Growth of the game all
Stanford,
over the world.
And Stanford is what I mean. I mean, it's just, you know, it's
the NBA knew something about being a global sport years ago. And, I mean, we're attracting players from all around the world. And, you know, it used to be Americans dominated the game. And, you know, when the foreign players came to the place like the NBA, they were looked upon as being soft. But that's no longer the case on the women's side or the men's side.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And you know, the groundwork the NBA started laying down years and years ago, you see it at every level of the sport now. And the some of the best players coming out of high school, the biggest recruits, have roots in, you know, in Africa, in Europe, in Asian countries. It's changing at a, you know, breakneck pace.
It's good for the sport, I think.
Absolutely,
it's excellent for the sport. And you know, for people that are still sleeping on women's basketball, they really do need to take some time to take a look at this Final Four. And if they only have a little bit of time to really take a look at the University of Connecticut and the way that they play. You know, we talk about great coaches.
Yeah.
What Gino Auriemma has accomplished in Storrs, Connecticut with that program is pretty remarkable. You know, and we talk about the X's and O's and the knowledge. And, you know, you also have to be the ultimate psychologist because, you know, you have kids who are, you know, going through academic struggles, personal struggles. You know what it's like to be between 18 and 22 years old and what that roller coaster is like, and on top of that, trying to be an elite athlete. But, you know, in my opinion, UConn has the female equivalent of Kevin Durant, and her name is Breonna Stewart. And if for people that have not seen her play, they are going to be in for a fantastic treat when they watch how multidimensional, how smooth she is, how she can shoot, how she can go down low, how she can block shots, how she can pass and dribble and run the break. She's a phenomenal basketball player. So, Dave, I know you're rooting for Maryland. I don't know, you know, what kind of luck they're going to have against Notre Dame, even though they've got a shot.
Let me tell you, they don't need luck. They have Alyssa Thomas, since we're talking about great women's basketball players.
I got you.
She's amazing.
Isn't she something? Angie's fun to watch.
Yeah, so
you know, the interesting thing about Connecticut, they might be the only major program in the country where the women's coach makes more money than the men's coach.
Right.
I don't think there's any other major program in the country. I can't think of one.
No.
Where the men's coach makes more than the men's
coach. Not even
in
Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken.
Not even
I don't think that was even the case when Pat Summitt was there. Yeah. I don't think that she was ever made more than the men, who they had like a different guy coaching there, the men's team, every couple of years.
So folks, who do you like in the Final Four? 410-319-8888. I the Final Four. 410-319-8888. Let me jump into another subject here for a moment. Your thoughts on Ray Rice.
Wow. There's a transition
there's
for
a
you.
Transition. We're talking about women, so let's talk about Ray Rice.
You know, we've spoken about this numerous times on the Blacktop Exchange Sports Report, and you know, Ray, the Ravens have committed a big contract to Ray Rice.
Yep.
He's not going anywhere, and they've demonstrated their support. It baffles my mind. On one end, that a woman who can be involved in a situation where she was allegedly knocked out. Let's say that, because we don't know the facts.
She looked pretty knocked out in that video.
She looked pretty knocked out, but she was allegedly knocked out, and that she would turn around and marry him. And that to me is perplexing. I guess you have a case where if you're married, she can't testify against him in court. I don't know if that's the case in Maryland. Not in some states it is. But it just baffles my mind that she would really do that. And I just wish them happiness, and I wish her safety, and, you know, that's about it.
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of scares me about it, is that, you know, we do need to be concerned about her safety. I mean, we don't know all the details. They'll all come out whenever this thing does go to court. Hope, if it does go to court, I mean, you know how a lot of these cases go. And I think this is going to be an eye-opener to a lot of people, because I think most people, sad to say, even when it comes to, you know, celebrities like NFL players, when it comes to domestic violence, their eyes kind of glaze over, and they let their fanhood sort of take over. But, I mean, she could be somebody who's really in danger. This is a world-class athlete that she got into a fight with, no matter what the what the circumstances were. And, you know, the fact that we're still debating, oh, should he be playing, should he not be playing? I mean, you look at some of the reasons that NFL players are suspended and punished and disciplined, and to know that we're still sort of in a holding pattern on whether or not either the Ravens or the NFL is going to do anything about this sort of tells you that, you know, maybe some attitudes need to be adjusted about this.
Well, I think, and Ali, I'd like to jump in here, too. I mean, I think that's one thing that bothers me so much about this is that I don't think we take domestic violence seriously. I think we always think it's, you know, that we always say, well, it's the woman's fault, too. She shouldn't have started the argument. She shouldn't have had this fight. She shouldn't have hit him or whatever. But, you know, but for men to beat women, is not something that's acceptable. It's just not acceptable. And that somehow this should have been a learning moment for the NFL to start some kind of campaign on the television about why this is not acceptable from our players and for young men playing football. I mean, because it dribbles down to the, no pun intended, in any kind of ball, to like prep schools and high schools where this kind of violence against women takes place all the time, both sexual and physical assault. And, you know, that's why I was so bothered when I saw that video. And you know, I mean, that's, you know, a guy as tough as Ray Rice is, I don't care if she hit him or not.
It doesn't make any difference.
Absolutely.
It really does not. And a lot of people sort of falling back on the, well, Ray Rice has never, he's been a good character ever since he's been with the team. And in fact, the owner said that not long ago, Steve Bisciotti. Said that. And he said, of course, he's, you know, disappointed, angry, that sort of thing. But he said, oh, he's been a good guy in the community, which he has been. I mean, he went to Annapolis, I guess it was a year or two ago, on a big anti-bullying campaign as a, sort of the face of that campaign. And so he's done a lot of good things. But, you know, that doesn't negate what he did. What he did, what he's accused of doing was a horrible thing. And it's interesting, you talked about whether the league should do anything. A lot of women who pay attention to this stuff really closely have noticed that the NFL has really bought into the Breast Cancer Awareness Month every October. Everything is pink all over the NFL, including the penalty flags for a few weeks until they said,
okay, that doesn't
show up very well. Socks, helmets, you know, face masks, all these other things. And people have said, okay, if you're willing to make that kind of commitment, why don't you make the same commitment against domestic violence in the league? Knowing the sort of history that a lot of players in this league have had with that, including a player shooting his girlfriend and killing her before killing himself just a couple of years ago. And the NFL has been very silent about that, both as a league and as the individual teams. I mean, can you imagine knowing what the NFL did for the breast cancer awareness, if they ever did that for domestic violence awareness, what kind of an impact that would be? How much things could really change if they decide to do that? But, you know, so far from their end of it, silence.
Let's get a phone call in here. Again, we'll go right back. We'll take a break here. 410-319-8888. Ducky, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark, God bless you and your guests, and thank you so much for having this discussion. Having been an athlete myself and still participating as a coach and having my son also participated, my daughters also. One of the things I think, even as I'm absolutely against domestic violence, whether it's against males or females, and I've seen it be against males also. All right. And so all I'm saying is that how do we allow Pop Warner all the way up to professional sports to be a violent entertainment industry where males and females are cheering, you know, whether it be the runner hitting the hole, getting hurt and getting doctored up or with steroids to get back in the game. We cheer boxing, and I love all these sports. We cheer boxing and hockey. It ain't hockey until they start fighting, you know, and then expect those same men and women, right, in their domestic relationships to be nonviolent and have the tools to do so, particularly if you add those other dynamics like steroids, right? And so all I'm saying is that one of the things we have to do is have an honest discussion about sports in America for our youth, let alone for our entertainment. And the sports seem to be getting violent and violenter, and we seem to be entertained more and more. And yet when things like this happen that should not happen, we should expect them to happen. And so I'm saying lastly that we cheer a person like Ray Rice, or we cheer a person like Ray Lewis, or any athlete, right, male or female, and then when we find them doing these unexpected things that we say are unethical, whether it's using steroids to enhance their performance or acting violent, we say, where did that come from? It came from us. You know, we sanction it. We need prevention, intervention, and maintenance on all levels of male and females. Thanks.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much for calling in.
I'll say this. I mean, it's, you know, he mentioned about football, and it's such a violent thing, and people watch it, and they probably pick up some habits from it, adapt from it. But you have to be, as an individual, you have to be able to separate reality, right, and from what's make-believe, or, you know, if you're watching a movie or you're watching a football game. Just because it's violent in football don't mean you carry it over into your regular life. Just because you watch a film that has, you know, dozens of people shot up, you don't carry it over to your regular life. So I think as parents, we have to teach our children how to separate that and to know better.
No, I agree 100%. And that seems to be sort of an eternal problem. I mean, this is a debate that's been going on for ever since, you know, movies were invented, ever since things like comic books and violent books were being written. You know, people continue to turn to those forms of entertainment as sort of rationales for their own personal, you know, problems, you know, violent behavior, and say, well, it wouldn't be like this if the media wasn't like this. Well, it doesn't have to be like that, because you should know where to draw the line. Mm-hmm. Nobody should have to tell you where that line is.
And we'll take a break here, but we'll come right back with our guest, the co-host of Blacktop Exchange Sports Report here on WEAA. And you know, I was just thinking, as reflective for these 10 seconds here, that sports in some ways was one of the ways we're supposed to channel that violence into a place that is more appropriate, whether it's boxing or whether it's wrestling or whether it's football or playing soccer or whatever that is. That's that, and some, and we lose sight of that too, and that's supposed to be the counterbalance to violence in some ways.
Yeah,
so we'll be right back with the co-host of our great new show here on WEA Blacktop. Stay with us.
Walking through the park, it wasn't quite dark. There was a man sitting on a bench. Out of the crowd, as his head lowly bowed, he just moaned and it made no sense. He just go,
Major Lance, happy birthday, born on this day in 1941. We are here with the three co-hosts of the great new show, Blacktop Exchange Sports Report. Ali Danwa, Jerry Bembry, and David Steele, 410-319-8888, and you. So let us go to this NCAA ruling affecting Northwest University, saying that the players could form a union. I think this is huge, really. Thinking about the monopoly that the NCAA has always had on sports, and all the hundreds of millions of dollars have passed through that organization, could be significant. What could tumble out of this?
Yeah, it is billions. You were right. You were right
the first time.
It is, and it's interesting because so many people who have sort of looked at it from the outside, or looked at it sort of casually, have framed it in terms of, oh, athletes are trying to get paid, they're trying to get salaries for playing there, which I think eventually that may be the direction everyone's going to start discussing it in. Mm-hmm. But I think that this ruling and what the Northwestern players did sort of pulled the cover back on so many basic rights that they do not have, and that the NCAA does not want to give them in terms of medical treatment and their academics and just their due process in a lot of ways, and their right to bargain the terms of what they do for the school, which is play football and bring in a lot of money. And you talk about the, all the money that goes into just national TV contracts, the Big Ten Network, radio and appearances and shoe contracts and what the coaches make and the athletic directors make and all those kind of things. And this all sort of opens everybody's eyes to, it's like, hey, they're asked a lot. They're told that they can do a lot, and they're given relatively nothing in exchange for it.
Nothing. Right. I mean, that is true. And they're making millions. And also the players are forced to wear T-shirts and shoes that push people's corporate products with the money going to the NCAA. Uh-huh. All that's in there as well.
I think it's really interesting that this impetus is coming out of Northwestern, because Northwestern, you know, is not a football factory. And so people would kind of look at this and you know, see this as a peculiar situation. And I think a lot of people kind of miss the point of what's going on here. They're not unionizing so that players can get exorbitant sums of money. They want to unionize to protect the rights and fight for the rights that the athletes have when they come into these major corporate enterprises, because that is what they are. When you look at the amount of time that they spend on their athletic pursuits, specifically the football players, when you take into account spring practice, when you take into account staying over to work out during the summer, when you take into account everything that goes on in the fall, when you start counting the cash registers and you start paying attention to these opulent athletic facilities that are being built on their campuses, and when you look at the financial aspect of it, then when you flip the coin and you see that, you know what, if an athlete gets hurt and those injuries linger well into adulthood, well, the university and the NCAA does not cover those injuries. So right. When they're on campus and they tear an ACL, yeah, they're covered and they'll get surgery and they'll be able to go to rehab. But we need to pay attention to the fact that, you know, this brain injury stuff that's going on in the NFL with this huge settlement, that's not just simply an NFL problem. We have a lot of guys who played major college football that nobody ever heard about because maybe they played for a Northwestern. Maybe they played for a North Dakota State. But right now, you know, because of too many slams to the head, they're sitting somewhere drooling. They can't carry on a conversation. They can't work a full-time job. You know, so there are a lot of issues here that people are kind of missing the boat on. And it's so interesting, you know, the NCAA says that, you know, they are for this, you know, concept of a student athlete, right? But we have the NBA draft coming up, and we have these underclassmen now who are declaring to go to the NBA draft. Well, some of them are going to realize that they made a mistake. If the NCAA really cared about their student athletes, these guys would be able to say, you know what, I wasn't drafted even though I declared to come out in the draft, and now I want to return to college and continue my career. You know, as of, I believe the date is April 15th, and I might be wrong, but If the player doesn't decide by then to come back to school, he's lost his scholarship. And then the scholarship is another issue, because people believe that the scholarship is a 4 to 5 year promise. No, the scholarship is renewable year by year. And we have many instances of players who are promised the world by these coaches. They get them on campus, they get hurt, something doesn't work out, the scholarship's not renewed, and they can't come back to college. So when we're talking about athletes' rights and the right to unionize and what this means, it really is about athletes making sure that their best interests are being taken care of, and not necessarily, you know, people saying, well, a scholarship is enough, these guys are greedy, right. Why do they deserve to get paid? They're employees of the university, and they make the university money, and they have rights. And I do believe within the next 5 to 10 years, the NCAA, as we know it now, is not going to exist in its current form. They've hoarded the money for a very, very long time, and now it's time to share the wealth and do right by these kids who make people millions of dollars.
And I just want to say really quickly that if you watch the tournament and you read the news reports, there are coaches who, when they advance to the next round, they might pick up an extra $100,000 to $200,000 along the way. If they win a national championship, they might get an extra $500,000 in their contract. If you watch TV, there are sportscasters who are getting paid on these advertisements. There are former athletes like Charles Barkley who are getting paid on these advertisements. And everybody's getting something but the athletes. And, you know, there was a situation 2 weeks ago where a team lost an NCAA game, and they were forced to leave their hotel after the game that night and go back to campus. So the NCAA, which makes billions of dollars with this tournament, could not put this team up for one night in a hotel and let them stay and rest and let this loss sink in and then go home. And so they were forced to get on a plane at close to midnight, get back to campus at 3 a.m. There was no bus there to pick them up. And, I mean, so this is what the NCAA does to these kids. They kind of spit them out after they use them up. And I think it's time for these kids to get paid. And, you know, we don't have to pay them $200,000 a year, but let's give them something. Let's give them a scholarship that's guaranteed for 4 years and a chance to pay for meals. And if your mom's homesick and you got to go home, and just give them a plane fare back home to do that stuff. And they're not doing that right now, the NCAA.
I mean, I sometimes wonder, I mean, if the NCAA has not outlived its usefulness. It's just become a corporation to make money for itself and for a certain group of mostly men, and doesn't really, I mean, they're like an oligarchy controlling everything to do with college sports.
Yeah, and you pinpoint it perfectly. Control. That's what it is. The athletes feel like their lives, they have no control over their lives, over their abilities. I mean, just the simple fact of, you know, that the fact that they can be told when they can and can't try to go pro, when they can or can't transfer to another school, when they can't take certain classes, declare certain majors, take classes at certain times of the day because it conflicts with football or basketball practice, with off-season training. And this is the sort of thing that they've been discussing all the years, and the NCAA simply has not budged.
Right.
Even when they talk about, hey, they get free tuition, they get scholarships, for the most part, and studies have proven this, the numbers are out there to be seen. What the NCAA gives them does not cover the full cost of attending those schools, including housing and food, insurance, and all the expenses that you need. Like anybody who's within earshot, whoever went to college, understands what the full cost is to go to school. And those athletes are not given that, despite what everyone's been told, oh, the quote-unquote free ride that they're getting, which, of course, isn't free because they pay for it with their own health in a lot of these cases.
In addition to that, a couple of weeks ago, we had three of the top high school basketball players from Baltimore City that were state champions. They joined us on our show. They'll be playing major college basketball next year. And one of those guys went on a recruiting visit, and they told me this story. To a major school with a major coach who is very famous and very wealthy. And he told the coach, basically throughout the whole recruiting visit, the coach never talked about academics. Yeah. Talked about how many players he'd gotten to the NBA. He said the vibe was just really, you know, for most people, they would think, oh, wow, you're getting recruited by this school. That's amazing. You'll be on TV. And he said the whole stench of it just didn't sit well with him. And when he told the coach that he wanted to major in either business or engineering, the coach said, well, that's probably going to be practically impossible for you to do here because of the commitment you have to make to the basketball program. And the guy said, you know what? I'm not going. They offered him a scholarship, major university, big time conference. And he said, I'm not even going to that place. I don't care how famous that coach is. Didn't say one word about academics. It was all about, I've got this many guys going to the NBA. I've got this many guys playing pro ball in Europe. And he's like, well, what about my education? So even though these kids are getting scholarships and people say they're getting a free college education, in many instances, they're not even getting a real education.
Yeah, and you know what some of these graduation rates are. I mean, and the University of Pennsylvania put out a study, I think it was just about a year ago, that the graduation rate for African-American male athletes who play both football basketball. It's, if I'm not mistaken, it's below one-third. It's in the 32-33% range.
That's criminal, really.
Right. It is criminal. I mean, it's probably grounds for for a fraud lawsuit when it comes down to it.
I mean, I would hope that this NCAA suit really sends the whole thing spinning into a much larger arena. I think that, you know, we saw with Taylor Branch and other people who started taking on the NCAA a few years ago, and then we had shows with him about that here. And I think that this there may be some momentum over in this decade moving to confront the power that is. Yeah. Let's hope that's true.
Well, the money is so enormous now that there's no way anybody can ignore it. So that, and the influence that has. So.
There's one thing before we go, and I really appreciate you guys being here today, and I really love the program you put on here on WEA on Sundays. You've really taken it up a notch. discussion up a notch here for not just WEA, but for, I think, the city as a whole, for the community. There's another show on the media where you get into the depth of sports that you three do. So I think you've created something really important here.
Thank
beyond WEA and beyond the rest, just for the entire look at sports. And I just want to conclude with this. This is a piece I had to write here because it was one of my obsessions. Dan Snyder started this foundation, the original Americans Foundation, to try to get away with his racist terminology for his team. And he hires this guy, Gary Edwards, who's allegedly Cherokee, who ripped off $1 million by not hiring anybody to be a law enforcement official than he said he would on the reservation. And the other person he hired worked for Jack Abramoff when he was ripping off Native Americans and casinos. These are the people he hires to run this alleged foundation to absolve himself of his racist antics. So I just had to put that out there. And all my friends who listen to Prince George's County, D.C., stop wearing the jackets. Make them change the name. Don't go. Say, I'm going to stay home and watch it at home on my big screen. All right, gentlemen.
No argument for me. I grew up there. No argument for me.
That's amazing.
There are a lot of sports writers out there who won't even use that term in their stories now. And I just wish that they would just – he keeps on saying that he has the support of people in Washington, D.C. Why don't you just put it up for a vote? And put it up for a vote and let's see what the real numbers are. And then I think the real numbers will probably reflect the thinking that both all three of us in the studio have, and I'll leave that they should not use that term. It's a racist term, and they should exclude it.
It's
and
the height of arrogance and racism.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
It just gets to me all the time. Yeah. Anyway, I want to say, folks, if you haven't done it yet, this Sunday at 7 p.m., tune in to WEA 88.9 FM for Blacktop Exchange Sports Report with these three incredible men, Ali Danwa, Jerry Bembry, and David Steele.
Hey, Mark.
What?
Hey, real quick.
Yeah, real quick. We really got to make
this Sunday, 7 o'clock, is the 30th anniversary of the Georgetown victory over the University of Houston, Phi Slamma Jamma, and we have Baltimore legend Reggie Williams from Dunbar High School.
All right.
One of the greatest players in the history of Georgetown University. 10-year NBA player. He's going to be on the air with us to play NCAA tournament basketball.
Phenomenal. The first African-American coach to win.
John Thompson.
That was a great time and great game. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming and gracing these studios. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Thank you.
On the way out of here, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to Mark Steiner Show's website, steinershow.org. Click on MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union banner, and there we have it. Don't forget sports on Sunday night. We'll be right back.